It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast. Our 25-minute look into officiating, our roundtable discussion with the crew from Football Zebras. I'm Ben Ostro, joined by Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert, and Pat Weber. So we have a few things that we have on tap for this week. We start in San Francisco, and there was a little bit of a sideline miscommunication situation that came up around a penalty. And basically, the short version, we're going to have a longer post that explains a little more of the detail of that. So check the website. It'll be on there. And basically, the 49ers were backing up the Jaguars on some offensive holding penalties. They got them into half-distance penalties. And at one point, the crew, trying to work through things expediently, accepted the penalty on behalf of the sideline, which they do typically a lot of times. When it's very routine, they will just enforce the penalty as they believe it's going to be done. And if the coach says, no, I want to change my, I don't want to do it that way, then they'll announce a correction. It's more to move things along because the TV end of it is every second that bleeds away is money to them. So they encourage this to be done a lot faster. Back in the day, there would be conferences on the sideline. And so in order to avoid this conference, got a penalty accepted when they wanted to decline it. And Shanahan jumped in, but a little bit too late because the rules has changed in the offseason that only allow when the ball has been spotted after administering the penalty, that's it. Can't change your mind. Because that was gamed a lot last season, we wound up with this new rule. Now, that's not the situation that Shanahan was trying to do, but the rule is the rule. So I just kind of want to get into some of these efficiency situations, trying to do things in a way and to move the game along. But, you know, occasionally you might get a coach that's not quite paying close attention and gets lost in the shuffle here.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have this problem certainly on Friday nights, and Pat can obviously jump in on the college side. I'm sure in Division I, where again games are on TV, like you said, minutes are money. But when it comes to, you know, non-broadcast games, we want to make sure we get it right. So we take the time to explain to coaches, here are your two options, and usually the best way to do that is to say, okay, it's going to be first and 15 or second and 9. Which one do you want? And usually you kind of phrase it in those terms. They give you an answer and away you go. And honestly, at the lower levels where we're not all professionals, if you go too fast is usually when you make mistakes. So we like to err on the side of going slow, making sure things are correct. At least again, on the football side on Friday nights. But again, maybe Pat, you can jump in here and discuss on the college side how fast you actually want to go as well.
Yeah, college is a little more similar to the NFL. 1IR, which is not often on the college level, but part of our conversation pregame with the coaches is telling them that if it's obvious, we're just going to go ahead and enforce or decline the foul as the game would dictate. But we'll tell them if we think it's, you know, a toss-up, we'll communicate with them. And I think we like to err on the side of it's a toss-up, you know. And part of that comes back to, you know, football IQ or just game feel, which is a separator from good officials to great officials, is kind of knowing the deeper, you know, getting that in that deeper layer of what's going on in the particular moment of the game and knowing when those fouls are tweeners where they may accept or decline it. So we can have that communication with the coaches. Obviously, the D3 side, when we're not on TV, we do go a little slower still. So the coach probably has more time to flag us down if we're accepting a foul or declining a foul and they want the opposite. But it is also helpful to have 7 people because even if the sideline official is the reporting official for the foul, there's always somebody near the coach generally.
Yeah. So going back to the Friday night aspect as well, doing this at the high school level, as Chris had said, because this is something that is in my wheelhouse as well. When it's a situation like this that we saw in this game here with San Francisco, the two options that were involved, the rule of thumb that I kind of like to think of to go really slow and make sure we get a clear answer as to whether we want to enforce a penalty or not is both of the options have more than 10 yards to gain involved. So this may be something that just comes with experience or just comes with feel for the game. But when you have an option like he did that was second and 17 or third and 12, again, if it's something like first and 20 or second and 6, that's pretty clear. But a lot of times, and especially situationally, some coaches are going to want to favor losing a down over losing yardage. So again, we don't want to go too quickly. We don't want to make decisions and become complacent in those decision in that decision making where we would normally say, oh, you know, we know he's going to want to take this. However, you know, the reason why I go back to the yardage aspect is second and 17 and third and 12 are pretty similar. You have it's long yardage plays, and typically with long yardage plays, if it's a foul that the defense gets to choose, they'll want to just use up the downs rather than back them up more if they're already backed up. So that's something I like to think of. It goes along with going slow, but those long yardage options, when you have them for both accepting and declining, a lot of times they'll just take the down. So it's something that should just become part of that post-play penalty enforcement routine, getting the information from the calling official to the wing on that official, to the wing on that team's side, and just get a very clear response rather than becoming complacent and saying, all right, we're just going to back them up 10 or back them up 5.
And I guess it's more of a proximity thing because, you know, since we were backing up to the goal line, obviously there's a distance from the bench to where, you know, where most of the officials are. So it's probably just the deep official on each sideline that's going to be closest to the coach. And yeah, just being visible there, I suppose, to be able to get the attention of the coach. And let me just throw this out because we'll talk about other examples of sideline communication. I mean, obviously there's situations, and Chris alluded to explaining the options clearly and giving them this, you know, the net result instead of just explaining it in terms of this in yards and this in the loss of down, and just, you know, giving them the really basic, here's the end result of either option. Then, you know, maybe there's different ways of communicating with different coaches. Any sort of anything you have to share on whether or not, like, maybe on one week you handle something differently, and then you know, hey, this coach has been around for a while. He knows what is going on. I can be really brief with him.
I think with what Chris brought up, just giving them this very simple situation A, situation B, which one do you want, tends to work the best. Head coaches a lot of times have a lot of information they're processing, and the cleanest you can break it down, the simplest we can break it down, kind of just makes that process efficient. And there's always some coaches here or there who maybe want more information, but for the vast majority, they just want the down distance of each option, and they'll tell you A or B.
Yeah, and as Cam alluded to, there's obviously situations that crop up that are more important. Like, so for example, you know, if you have an unsportsmanlike conduct on a score, right, do you want it on the try or the kickoff? You know, these are obviously some detailed questions have to be answered that you can't just make the decision for them. So to Pat's point before of, yeah, having a football IQ as an official or as a white hat and knowing, yeah, this is a situation I need to go over and ask versus just accepting it is again, as Pat alluded to, it makes you either a good official or a great.
And going back to the application of that tactic on Friday nights, hate to keep pulling it away from the NFL, but just from my experience, another one of those things is a rule at the high school level where if there's a foul under 2 minutes and the clock was running at the end of the play, the offended team has the option to start the clock on the snap, where it would normally have been spun again after enforcement of the penalty. And that's something I always make sure, you know, that's under 2 minutes. So I always make sure I'll get on the 0-2-0 at 2 minutes and I'll say, all right, we're under two, clock options in play, making sure everyone on the crew understands that if we have a foul and we only stop the clock to administer the penalty, that we go to that offended coach and let them know. But back to what Ben said about, you know, sometimes you may understand, hey, this coach knows has been around a little bit longer than this other coach. I think that speaks really well to the officiating that I do up in Southern Massachusetts. My association mainly covers two groups, a group of vocational schools and a group of high-powered public schools that have produced a quarter of the state semifinalists playing in the championship games over the last however many years. When you work those voc school games, sometimes you have to go to those coaches and explain, you know, okay, do you want first and 20 or second and 13? And other times when you're working those games with the coaches that have been around for 40 years that are doing these really high profile schools and games, all you have to do is turn your head and they're already either pointing saying take them back or they're giving the decline signal. You don't even have to say it. They're already way ahead of you. So again, sometimes situationally when you're working at, and obviously now when we get to the Pop Warner, the youth level, all bets are off. You know, you just got to make sure that everything's communicated properly. But again, it goes all the way back up to the top. When we get into those situations where, you know, it really could go either way, you don't want to, your football IQ could be amazing. But if you get to a point where, you know, it's really a toss up as to whether they want to take the foul or not, just take your time and find out and do it the right way.
Okay, and we'll take it to another play from Sunday. It was a sure touchdown for the Colts. Adonai Mitchell was going down the sideline on a 75-yard pass. The problem was that the end zone was 76 yards away. His early celebration wound up being a fumble into and out of the end zone. Which, of course, then brings up the fewer is this a fair penalty. Although I would say this time there wasn't that much of that because it seemed to be pretty fitting of the crime, I guess, in this particular situation. But basically, yes. So we have the rule that crops up. It's been around since the very beginning. It really underpins the whole aspect of ground acquisition and, you know, you have to get to your opponent's goal and not just throw the ball in there. So there was a sure touchdown turned touchback. And the other part of it from an officiating standpoint is your attentiveness in the game. Don't assume, don't signal early that there's a touchdown. Wait and expect every single time that something's going to go wrong. And most of the time it won't. But that one time where it does go south, you're there and you're prepared and you're not having to withdraw a touchdown signal.
Yeah, when it comes to, you know, those of us that officiate, again, Fridays and Saturdays, unfortunately, A, we don't have typically and B, unfortunately, we're not as fast as these younger, faster players are, right? So, again, I'm sure Cam and Pat can comment on their association meetings, but, you know, every meeting, every play we review is typically, did you get beat to the goal line? And that's always number one for any deep wing back judge, you know, five man, it would be the line judge or line of scrimmage officials. And again, unfortunately, some of us just aren't as fast as 18-year-old wide receivers that can run like lightning. And you really still have to make a call, right? If they beat you to the goal line and something like this happens, you have quite frankly the worst angle you could possibly have, but you still have to make a decision if he scores or not. And that's why, again, that's why they profess, you know, getting to the line every time. And thankfully, again, on the NFL side, we've had other reviews and other replays here. All those cameras out there really help make this decision, this replay review, easy to tell if he made it or not.
Yeah, and a big axiom, especially with non-replay games, you know, no cheap touchdowns, no cheap turnovers. And I don't care what sport you're officiating, slow timing is good timing. And we can always go up with that touchdown signal a few seconds late. It won't make any difference in the world. We need to actually see the ball in possession across the goal line. And that way, when you have a play like this and you're planted there and you're focused on the ball, you can see that ball come out and not be already going up, assuming, and you'll see that ball come out and have great mechanics like the officials on Sunday did, and see that ball out early, see the ball go out of the end zone, and now you can go up with your touchback signal.
Now, a lot of times when this is happening with games where there are no deep wings, you're doing a five-man game, it's going to be impossible to be 100% sure if you're trailing the play. Luckily, at the college level and above, you're going to have that deep wing parked at the pylon, hopefully. But on a play like this, it's a long yardage play. So it's kind of the same thing. The deep wing's got to get there, and he's got to get there to be able to see it. So I had a play a couple weeks ago in a game where very, very similar thing. It wasn't an early celebration. It was just more of a dive for the pylon. And it happened to be one of the only schools in this part of the state that actually has a video board. And didn't get a good look at it. And, you know, tried to get some help from my back judge, didn't get much help there. So we decided to go up with it rather than do a lot more intimidating result. And when they showed it on that screen at that school, we obviously weren't looking at it, but we could tell by the reactions that it wasn't the best way to rule on that. However, going back to this, a lot of people like to say, you know, this is the worst rule in football, blah, 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 blah. Now, in the spring league, the UFL, they are a little bit different. They return this to the spot of the fumble. I am not a proponent of that. I like the rule. There's some level of sacredness to the end zone and to the goal line. So taking a look at it from a very outside looking in perspective on a more wider scale, the rule being in place, it's a good rule, I think. I know a lot of people don't like it, but when you apply it to something like this, you know, you can't celebrate early. We've seen this a handful of times over the last 10 years or so. I know there was a play going back, geez, this might be 10 years now. It was the opening game, I believe, in 2014 or 15. Opening game was Denver and I think Baltimore. It was a play like this. I remember Walt Coleman was the white hat. So you got to make sure you cross that goal line. You got to make sure you cross that goal line. And as an official, you got to make sure you see player possession crossing the goal line in order to make that ruling. Now, again, like we've all been saying, if you can't get there, you got to do your best to get there. But if you can't get there, there's no need to just go right up, process it, get help from officials that may have other angles, because again, officiating is all about angles, and try to make the best determination. Use replay if you can. If you're us on Fridays, you just got to go with what you got.
Yeah, about the only time that there isn't the outcry of this being the worst rule ever is when stuff like this happens and it's a player celebrating and just drops the ball. And now it's just rewards in the eyes of the fan.
Right, and the one that immediately comes to mind is the Super Bowl with Leon Lett, and you know that will be engraved in his tombstone. And and in that case, you had a crew that they just recently removed replay. They were so frustrated by the first generation of replay that they actually said, let's stop doing this. And it was most of the 90s where there was no replay until they came up with a challenge-based system. And so, yeah, you had a bunch, you know, you had the officials there, Dick Hantak and, gosh, I'm trying to remember right off the top of my head. McKenzie was in there as well. They're trying to figure out what do we have. They were not there on the goal, which, you know, given Leon Lett's size, I'm surprised that they weren't there in time. But, you know, they had to make that call. And thankfully, it was the right one, you know, in a Super Bowl, although it was a blowout at that particular point. So it was irrelevant. But just generally, yeah, you got to, as you say, you got to be there. You got to, you know, try and keep that speed. But when it's a 75-yard pass like this, and they're not often like that, they're usually a lot shorter. But in this particular situation, yeah, it's an early celebration. And, yeah, you got to make that gut call and, you know, and anticipate it at any time. We'll finish up a little bit. We got about 5 minutes to go, and we'll take a look at something that caught my ear on Sunday. Greg Olsen was calling the game in Dublin, Ireland, and there was a situation where there was a sack. Quarterback's pulled down by the horse collar. Now, in the NFL, that's not a foul because it's not a runner and it's not going to be subject to the injuries that go to your knees when you pull down a runner who's in full tilt and they pull back there, the torque goes to his knees. But if he's standing in the pocket, that is not there. So they put an exception specifically in the rules. College has repealed it, but Greg Olson saw that on the replay. He's like, you know what? Everybody's thinking horse collar. And he jumps in with, let me explain why this is not a horse collar. And instead of deferring it to Mike Pereira or whoever the rules analyst would be on any of the networks. So there's not very many of these, but we do try to call them out when we see them. When you have people in the booth that know their rules and don't have to rely upon the rules analyst. And what makes our job a little easier and it probably makes other people's enjoyment of the game better. Yeah, they might not agree with it, but at least they're getting it served to them with all the caveats all laid out there as to what the rule is.
Having the rule analyst in the booth has been one of the best additions to football ever since Pereira started that trend. And I think some of the good announcers listen to their counterparts and learn some things and are able to now apply that as things have gone on. And I mean, as a baseball fan, Apple TV has an expert now, but as we go in the playoffs, none of those broadcasts have an expert. And when weird things happen, sometimes the broadcasters just make up rules and are very confidently incorrect. And it doesn't help when it comes to fan reaction when that happens.
Yeah. Misinformation is certainly worse than no information. And I don't know if it's just those of us that officiate like hearing people that are knowledgeable about the rules, because I agree with Pat. I mean, I have loved the addition of rules analysts, and it was funny. I was doing a varsity football game and we had a hurdling call, which doesn't have a signal, right? So, but the PA announcer knew exactly what we were calling and said, oh, you know, hurdling was called. You could see that, you know, he almost went into a commentary of why it was called, which was I was almost laughing in the middle of the field because this guy clearly knew what was going on. And I think that just brings additional knowledge to a game where I think a lot of fans may not know some of these things that are called or why they're called it. And Greg Olson being able to seamlessly explain this just makes the broadcast so much better. Whether it's Tirico, whether it's anybody else, there's a bunch out there that do clearly know what's going on, and their broadcasts are so much better than the ones that either have misinformation or just don't know anything about.
Sometimes it's interesting to see some older broadcasts pre-Pereira. And it's funny how you say, you know, sometimes they'll just make up something that is so clearly wrong. But again, yeah, having that input that saves the rules analyst from coming in is really nice and refreshing to hear. And again, you know, when you have these players, these ex-players that are more in tune with the game, they've been in the game more recently, it's really nice to be able to hear that they're still on top of rules changes and rules applications. And, you know, it's really great. And I just want to give a shout out to our Broadcaster of the Year award that we present every year. This year will be our third time presenting it. We've presented in the past to Adam Amin of Fox and Mike Tirico of NBC, two of the play-by-play analysts that are really on top of their rules game, and it's very clear when watching their broadcasts. So to be able to see the same thing coming from a color commentator, in this case from Greg Olson, these former players, it's really nice to see.
And when you have one, and gosh, you know, I'm gonna go there. When you have a bad one, it's even more noticeable. And you know, to be honest, you know, on Monday Night Football last year, you had Troy Aikman, who was really grousing about things and almost to the point of being harassing to Russ Yerk, the rules analyst there. You know, Russ would say something and Troy would answer with, well, I don't know about it. And I think that there was even a talk to from the officiating department. I'm not entirely sure on that one, but I have a sense that there was a talk to from the officiating department to Troy Aikman and said, you know, look, you've got to ease up on this. If he's saying something, you know, don't pull the rug out from under. And with that, we have reached the end of another First and 25 podcast. Thank you for listening.